Good evening, Santa Ana. This is Art Pedroza, and welcome to our very first podcast of the new Santa Ana Political Cheesemist Show. We're going to have a really fun guest tonight. Tai Viet Phan is running for Ward 1. These are going to be historic elections this year in Santa Ana. We're going to have ward-specific elections. It's the first time we've done that, so if you live in a particular ward, you're only going to be voting for the person that represents that ward. So we'll get her on the show in just a minute. I want to mention that we have a sponsor for tonight's show, and that is my favorite pollo restaurant here in Santa Ana, El Pollo Norteño. You can find them on Facebook. They are actually offering a $10 gift card to one of our listeners. We're going to have a question on our Facebook page after the show, and we'll see who gets it right. And then if they can get that right, then we will be able to give that $10 gift card. So, Pollo Norteño, my favorite there is the combo that has carne asada and pollo and arroz and frijoles and your choice of tortillas and fresh homemade salsa. It's really delicious. And they actually grill the chicken on mesquite chips, so it's just fantastic. So I want to mention about the new Santa Ana blog. We've actually been in business since 2009. And we now have over 1.8 million viewers or readers for the year so far. So the last 4 years, we've had at least a million. And that's really incredible. I want to thank those of you who follow the new Santa Ana, both our blog and our Facebook page. And I just got a note from our guest that she's having some difficulties getting on. So let me see if I can fix that. All right, that should work. So hopefully she'll jump on soon and be able to contribute to tonight's show. You might remember her. She ran in the recall election recently when Ceci Iglesias was recalled. And she wasn't successful, but she ran a good campaign, and now she's
All right. Hi, can you hear us? I can't hear you.
Hi, can you hear me?
To the show.
I cannot hear anything. Hang on.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, there you go. Yes. Are we good? I had to call in on my phone, but it works out.
Hear us now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hello, Ty. Ty, can you hear me now?
Yeah, am I just not showing up? Can you not hear me?
Let me try that. Okay, Ty?
On?
Yeah, I'm on.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, this is perfect. You got Excellent. Rid of background.
Well, I'm glad, you know, I ended up plugging the headset in directly. So first show, we're going to have some issues, but we're on. So Ty, I was just looking at your bio. How old were you when your family left the refugee camp in Thailand?
Ooh, I was probably under one. Is after Thailand, we went to the Philippines, came here.
Wow.
Yeah, so baby size.
So my friend Hugh Nguyen, who's the clerk recorder, I think he was 7 when he left Vietnam, and they ended up in San Diego. But I cannot imagine the travails your family went through. And reading your bio, your father ended up developing brain cancer after you arrived here in the United States. Is that right?
Yeah, my biological dad. So my mom is unlucky in love, I guess, but she married my dad when she was about 32. I'm 32 now, but I've been married for several years. She had me when she was 35 in Thailand. She was very pregnant when they left Vietnam because he was like,
wow,
my child is not going to be born in a communist country. And so he forced a pregnant woman to traverse the jungles of Southeast Asia, ended up in Thailand. Apparently, he finagled their way into a hospital. So I was able to be born in a hospital. That's why I wasn't born in the refugee camp, just near it. And so we stayed there for a while, and then we ended up in the Philippines, stayed there for a little while, and then came to Southern California, to Santa Ana, as far as I know.
Wow. Now, so how old were you by the time you were in Santa Ana? Probably about 3 or 4?
No, I was like 2. We weren't in the camps for too long. My mom, she said, you know, we were several months in one place and several months in the other. Frankly, I don't know how they were able to travel with a child.
That's incredible. Now, were you the only child?
At the time, yes. My younger sister is about 2 years younger, and she was born right here in Fountain Valley Hospital.
Wow. Wow. That's really incredible. What really blows me away, then, your mom ends up raising you as a single parent for a while. It sounds like she may have remarried.
So, yeah, I guess community marriage or married in the eyes of the community.
Right, common law.
Yeah. I mean, California doesn't have common laws anymore, but or marriages anymore. But yeah, so she and my stepdad, who I refer to as my dad, eventually got together. And yeah, I'm very grateful for him, and I consider him my dad, as I mentioned. But he also passed away 3 years ago now from
heart. Sorry about that.
Yeah, that's why I said she's unlucky in love, but she's a strong lady, my mom.
Yeah, she sounds amazing. Now, how did you end up, was it UCLA that you went to?
Yes. Funny story. I had no concept of college growing up. My mom has a third grade education from Vietnam.
Oh my goodness.
To this day, her English is extremely limited. She understands more than she lets on, frankly.
Nice.
But she doesn't speak too much of it at all. And I kind of just kept up with my friends. And when I was, I think, a sophomore or a junior in high school, I went to Los Amigos High School, and a senior who had graduated was like, hey, I'll take you and a couple friends up to UCLA. I'm like, okay, wherever that is. I'd never been there before. I went. It was beautiful. Probably the most beautiful, like, college-y, European-y awesomeness. And I was like, I want to go here. It's pretty. And I was very lucky I got in. And the rest is history, I guess.
And it looks like you got your law degree at USC.
Yeah. So I got into UCLA. I was working two jobs at any given time while in undergrad because my parents weren't pitching in. They don't have money to pitch in for school. So it was all Pell Grants, FAFSA, you know, government, a small number of government loans, but a lot of scholarship money and working. And after I finished, I took a year and a half off. Throughout undergrad, I worked at In-N-Out Burger. So I worked there for for about 6 years on and off. And after undergrad, I took a year and a half off, worked at In-N-Out full time. And when I considered law school at the time, I actually wasn't particularly interested in practicing law. I wanted to work in education policy. As I mentioned, my mom has a third grade education, and I felt very deeply that education was my silver bullet out of poverty, out of Section 8, out of food stamps, out of Medi-Cal. And so I was like, I want to work on this. I want to help educators. I want to help teachers, and I want to help students. And then I started my law degree and my Master of Public Policy program also at USC. So I did a joint program, so I did them together. And that's when I discovered local government. Man, it is very much undersold. Yeah. And I discovered, you know, I love education, but if you don't have a safe place to sleep and food in your belly, then you can't learn. And so that's where I discovered my passion for local government. And now my whole life is dedicated to it, frankly.
Well, yeah, you ended up at one of the top law firms that works with the cities. Is there a particular city that you're assigned to?
Yeah, so I'm currently the appointed assistant city attorney for the city of Duarte. It's LA County as well.
Oh, yeah, I know Duarte.
Yeah, and Menifee out in the desert.
Oh, no way. My mom lives in Menifee.
No. Oh, my gosh.
Small world.
You know, okay, so Menifee is like a secret but not so secret place because you'll run into people and they don't know what Menifee is, or they're like, yeah, I have family who lives out there.
yeah, exactly. She loves it out there, but you can imagine it's pretty warm. But that's quite a drive between those two cities. But what great experience for someone wanting to get out to the city council, no?
Thanks. I'd like to think so. I mean, I spend my days, you know, really for a while, just working, right? Helping cities, city staff, officials, and appointed commissioners deal with whatever comes their way. And whether it's a development application or a new ordinance or state law that's being mandated or claimed by a resident. That's what I do every day. I try to help cities function and comply with the law and push, you know, make legal arguments to help push policies that these policymakers want. And so looking at Santa Ana, I was like, well, this is my home. I can tell you things about my clients like the back of my hand, but as I was learning more about the government in our hometown, that's when I truly became very much invested because I wanted to use this experience and education with our city.
You're on the planning commission here locally, right?
I am.
How long have you been on that commission? I want to say at least a year, no?
No, almost a year, although it feels like 20 years, frankly. I was actually appointed on my birthday, December 2019.
Wow. What a birthday that was. But a good experience. I've been on a couple of different commissions, and it's nice. You get all the emails from the city and tips on what's going on, and it's a good spot to be in. Now, you were in the recall election. I thought you ran a pretty good campaign. Was there anything you learned from that campaign that you're applying to this campaign?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so much because not only was it during COVID, which is crazy in itself, right? A lot of candidates are learning it now, but it was my first campaign ever.
Wow.
Yeah, I had originally announced for this seat for November. And so when the recall certified and I'd live in the same place I lived when I originally announced it, it made a lot of sense. But yeah, I learned a lot, especially with one, dealing with trolls, people.
All right.
You know, I never fully understand when people say, well, the public or folks, random folks are going to say all sorts of things about you. They may not have any idea who you are. They might see one sentence or one clip, or they might hear about you and then they just assume things about you. And you learn to grow a thick skin. I have a pretty good thick skin. I'm an attorney after all, but it's a roller coaster. It's an emotional roller coaster, and you really learn to deal with that. The other thing is really learning to connect to voters. I spoke to more voters and more residents and more community members than I ever had before. And it was an incredible pleasure. Maybe because people were forced to talk to me because they had no one else because it was quarantined. But but it was
a
pleasure.
It's gotta be hard
to
campaigning,
folks.
You know, now you can't really go door to door. I mean, what are you doing now to get the campaign going?
So, you know, we're not canvassing in the traditional sense. It's very important to me that all of our volunteers are safe. Of course, Ward 1 encompasses both 92704 and 92703, which are, you know, the two zip codes with the highest rates of COVID infections in the county.
That's correct.
So it's very important to me that we're safe. But we are doing lit drops because of the lit drop, you're not talking to anyone. You're not really touching anything. You're not doing any of that traditional contact. And we're actually providing, you know, face masks, face shields, hand sanitizers, gloves. We're really doing a whole care package for our volunteers to make sure that they're safe. And it's been great because people kind of like being outside, you know, get some exercise in and do something easy. Plus, they don't have to talk to anyone.
Yeah, that's true. Now, let me ask you, what have you narrowed down some of the top issues you're going to focus on as a council person if you get elected?
Yes. And my top issues are definitely the things that I feel are core to my values. And they're not different from what I was running on before. I mean, I think your core values are your core values. But definitely housing and development, economic development, as well as public safety are definitely my three big ones.
You know, on that latter topic, there was a huge discussion on our Facebook page this week regarding the gang injunctions. And as an attorney, you're probably familiar with the concept, but how do you feel about the gang injunctions? Should we keep those going? Do you think there's something else we could do?
You know, when I first heard about them and learned about them, it was, you know, I see why we had done that. And I understand that Santa Ana has come a very long way. But I really think that we need to take a second look. And at this time, I would say we'd want to remove them and find a new way. And the reason why I say that is my husband is also an attorney. He was.
Yeah, I saw that he was in the JAG. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, we met in law school, and he has worked for the city attorney's office up in LA, the district attorney's office, and as well as a prosecutor in the Air Force. So,
wow.
A lot of legal experience in multiple fields in our family. And for me, a gang injunction, it can be overbroad, and it has a disproportionate effect on low-income communities, communities that are overly impacted, like Santa Anita, right? So we really have to revisit what we're going to do to deal with public safety. And when you have something like the gang injunction, I think, in my opinion, is that you're already going to the opposite end of the spectrum. You're focusing on punishment rather than rehabilitation and community-oriented public safety. And that's where I would like us to shift our focus on public safety here in the city. And I'm excited to work on that.
Yeah, what are your thoughts about trying to engage young people to keep them out of gangs? What else can we do? Because like you said, if we wait for them to commit crimes, you know, they're going to end up in the cycle of imprisonment and probation, and it doesn't seem to really work.
Right. So as a law student, I worked on a bill to for juvenile justice reform. And luckily, we were actually able to lobby for it in Sacramento, and it passed. So I'm very excited about that. And I've talked to juvenile offenders. In fact, the juvenile offenders I was working with were lifers at the time. So very, very serious felony crimes. And the one thing that I heard time and again is that we need to engage our young people. And to do that, in my opinion, is one, we need to have community programs. I know it's so hard right now, but sports, there's actually plenty of studies that show that just having after school sports and community sports lowers the rate of juvenile crime. Just something to let kids have something to do. it seems so simple, but it's a major issue. And for me, the library is essential. Essentially, it was kind of my babysitter after school because my parents tried to make ends meet and just couldn't watch me. And so they dropped me off at the library until closing, and I was fine. And actually, something that I wanted to bring up is that the New Hope Branch Library is launching curbside pickup services September 8th because we had renovated and everything. So, you know, really investing in those community programs for young people in our city, as well as specifically sports, as well as library services, computer services, I think are a great way to get people, you know, young people engaged.
Yeah, you're looking now with COVID that a lot of little kids are suddenly having to do remote learning. And I don't know exactly how they're going to do that with the really little kids, but I do think that Americans are resilient and kids today are so clever, but it's going to be really a long impact on our children the next few years. I don't see this going away anytime soon.
Right. And I don't have children of my own, and I cannot imagine what our parents are dealing with, what they're doing. I was a bit of a latchkey kid. My parents kind of, even though I'm a millennial, very proud of it. I'm a latchkey kid. And frankly, I was raised on TV, you know, daytime soap operas. If for some reason I was home on a weekday, Saturday morning cartoons, a lot of random Discovery Channel stuff. And I turned out okay. I think that we have to be kind to ourselves and our children and recognize that, yes, we want them to have distance learning, but also realize that this is a really hard time and just give ourselves the leeway to say, you know, I'm going to help my kid to learn, but recognize that they'll be okay. They will be okay in the long run.
Now, you mentioned the library and reading when you were a kid. Was there a book that you look back now as being your favorite book when you were growing up?
Oh man, I was such a nerd.
I could probably top you.
So I recall reading all of the Little House on the Prairie books. So it seems so exotic to me, which is kind of funny to say because it's American, you know, American expansionism and all of that. But I just, the idea of living in a little cabin in the woods and making apples with cloves or something to make your apartment, you know, room smell good is just so foreign to me because, you know, I'm an urban girl, grew up in essentially a concrete jungle here in Santa Ana and never had any experiences like that. And I grew up eating noodles and rice, and they grew up eating meatloaf or something, and that to me was
That was my sister's favorite TV show, The Little House on the Prairie. So definitely familiar with that.
I even drew
Nice. What heritage does your husband hail from? I couldn't tell from his name.
Yeah, so his family is funny because when some people look at him, he gets confused for Latino sometimes.
That's common.
Especially when he was looking at me. Yeah, but his family's from India. They're from North India.
Wow.
Near, yeah, and his dad, so his family's experience, his parents are immigrants, but they came here very much like economic and educational opportunities. His dad came here to get a master's degree. His dad has like a postdoctorate now. He's a professor. His mom has like three master's degrees. Very different experience as an immigrant family from mine. But he was born and raised in Ohio, in Kent.
That's incredible. Well, boy, what a diverse family. You guys must have some interesting family gatherings in terms of the food.
Oh, the last Thanksgiving was hilarious because we definitely had some Vietnamese food, a bunch of Indian food, and I had like a ham.
Nice. Yeah, my stepfather is from Gujarat, India, and he also came here as an engineer, you know, and was really into, you know, getting himself educated, but definitely a different experience. And well, we now have a vice president nominee who's half Indian. So that's been an overlooked community, but there's a lot of Indians in the United States, and so many of them are contributing to the various economies. Now, you mentioned developing Santa Ana's economy. Any ideas as to how we can get that going?
Yeah, well, the first thing that I'm really interested in is first, Santa Ana cares, right? The city council had decided to help support small businesses, and I made public comments in support of that because I know right now small businesses are suffering. We all know that. And
definitely.
So putting that money into grants to support our local small businesses, mom and pop shops, are really crucial. And one of the other things that I've been hearing time and again is how difficult opening a business in Santa Ana is. The permitting process is very confusing. You have very limited language access, especially growing up on the West Side, which is where the majority of Asian Americans, specifically Vietnamese Americans, live, and what Ward 1, right, there aren't Vietnamese speakers available at all times at City Hall. There isn't necessarily, if you go in, someone like my mom comes in and she needs, let's say she wants to file an application for something, you know, she'll either have to bring in a friend or me, which is usually the case, or, you know, they'll have to look for a translator somewhere. We don't have that language access, which is a big problem because the Vietnamese American community has lots of small business owners, people who are entrepreneurs. It's really in our blood. It's just part of our culture, both in Vietnam and as, you know, immigrants and refugees to this community, is to open up businesses, to own something that's yours. And so I really want to build access on that. So that's the second thing. And the third thing is that we need to think about the industries that are available to us today that we can really capture and expand on. And, you know, I don't know how popular it is, but frankly, for me, we need to capture the cannabis industry. And the reason why I say that is when you're looking, first of all, cannabis is, you know, considered, at least right now, bit of a it is an essential service, so they're open. And what I fully believe in is the more legal cannabis you have, the less illegal cannabis you have. And what we're seeing is other cities like Costa Mesa and some others who are looking to expand their cannabis ordinances to allow more businesses. So I want us to be ahead of the curve, not behind. And cannabis is an opportunity for us to really expand businesses, have good local hire. And I already know folks coming from out of town who are coming here to buy at these wonderful little hipster boutiques throughout the city.
Right.
And that's what we need to focus on. How do we expand that? And I've been hearing from a lot of folks that as COVID subsides, hopefully, we can expand on, you know, whether it's lounges or something like that, or even restaurants or delivery services, safely and with regulation and with buy-in and support from both the community, the industry, and the workers. And I think we can do that. And I think we can do that before everyone else.
I think I read recently that they opened something in downtown where it's going to be an opportunity for people who want to work with cannabis products to learn how to market them and make them. This, I think it's mostly food-related cannabis products, but do you remember hearing about that?
I don't, but hey, food-related cannabis, I mean, well, there are two kinds. There's CBD and then there's the THC, right? So I guess I'd have to see. I don't remember this, but it's definitely a difference. And one is easier to for some communities to approve of and then others.
Yeah, true. I think these were mostly edibles and those tend to be more the THC and you got to be careful not to eat too many. You might remember there was an NBA player that ate a bunch of gummies. Right. Oh, yeah, exactly. It can get pretty embarrassing. But and actually, that could become DUI. That would not be good.
Yes, it definitely can be.
Yeah, definitely. Now, listen, recently there was a retired editor from the Register who was killed by a couple of guys that were racing, and one of them crashed into him. You might have read about that. It happened in the north part of the city. So there's been a lot of debate about what we can do about that. I like to walk a lot at night, and I see that just crazy behavior on North Main Street, which is where I live. Any thoughts about that and what we can do to try to corral that?
Yeah, so I live kind of in the southwest area of the city, so we hear it at night.
Right.
A lot. So you're here on Fairview and Segerstrom and obviously certain parts of other parts of the city also are, like you said, deal with this a lot. And I would say the first thing is to look at one penalties, right? And I'm not, you know, that's one option, right? To look at penalties, what we can do as the city, because it's not always the case that the DA is going to say, oh yeah, or you're going to be able to, the DA is going to go prosecute the case or something like that. But even a local penalty, some type of misdemeanor would also be great to look at. And the other issue I would say is to better develop our streets and to make it more street, walker friendly, biker friendly, increase public transportation, because there's a lot of people who do, like you said, they walk at night, they're trying to do stuff, people who are still working, and increasing that kind of, in my opinion, activity also decreases their ability to be able to street race. I think it's hard because obviously our officers are dealing with a lot, and it's, you know, you're not scoping in a street corner necessarily to wait for a car to happen to race. But also, you know, making sure that we continue to ticket and prosecute these cases so that people know it's not okay and that we shouldn't have to wait until someone is murdered or killed for it to be an issue.
Correct. Now, are you on the central committee
for the Democrats?
I am not on the Central Committee, no.
Okay,
I thought I heard that you were.
I see you have a lot of great endorsements, though. So how's that coming along, picking up support from local electeds? It looks like you've got even a local member of the House and quite a few unions and some local electeds. What are you doing that's making a difference to get that kind of support?
Yeah, thanks. I'd like to think that it's just my awesomeness. I think that obviously even running in the special recall, which is a different election for sure, but a lot of people saw our grit and our scrappiness and what we're willing to do, that we're willing to work hard, that I'm not here because I'm trying to build a name for myself. I'm not here because someone asked me to run. I'm not here because I'm trying to promote my business. I'm here because I grew up here and I want to bring this experience to make a difference. And with other local electeds and organizations, I think they see that. They recognize that's what I want. I try to educate myself on as many issues as possible. And if it's something I don't know, I just say I don't know and teach me more, because that's what I am here to change in our city, right? To help get people engaged. And that's why I'm really proud to have a broad coalition of support. It's not just, say, you know, one party or the other. It's folks from all different parties, folks who might be super conservative or super progressive and everything in between. Because at the end of the day, I think that what we really want in a council member is someone who's considerate, who's thoughtful, who's going to learn, and who's going to, you know, really practice their values. And so I think that's what's made me successful. And man, it's a lot of work.
Definitely. I've run for office a few times, and it is a lot of work for sure. And you're doing this back to back with the last race, so you haven't had a break.
No, I haven't. But you know, with every election, like life and any job, there are good days and bad days, right? When you don't get an endorsement or you get an endorsement that you didn't think you would earn. But at the end of the day, for me, being able to, as a commissioner, but also as a candidate, I've had people reach out to me when they need help with something. When they're like, this is an issue that we really, you know, we're really concerned about. Can you talk about it? Can you raise this as something on the dais or at planning commission or as a public comment even, or just post about it on social media so that more people can see it? And that's really important to me as a Vietnamese American running in the seat that was created, that was districted to give Asian Americans, specifically the Vietnamese community, a voice in the city of Santa Ana. We're historically underrepresented, we're historically disenfranchised, and we're historically, you know, not non-participatory in local government. And that's a problem because there's thousands of us. And so there are thousands of people like my mom who just don't feel like they're a part of this city. And they go over to Westminster or Fountain Valley or Garden Grove, but that's not where they live. And so we're making decisions that affect thousands of people without their input. And so that's what I'm here to do. And it's what drives me. It's like, you remind yourself, it's not for you.
Yeah, if it's for me, good point.
I'd be in Tahiti somewhere if I could.
I do think that Latinos and Vietnamese, really, there's a lot in common there. And, you know, when I go to the pho restaurants, I see a lot of Latinos enjoying the food. But even when you look at the heritage and the culture, you know, both come from farming countries and both come from countries that have been torn by wars and all kinds of issues. So I really have always felt that the two communities should be working more closely together. And if you get elected, you know, that would put you in a unique position to be able to do that.
That's my goal. I mean, I was a Vietnamese refugee who went to Los Amigos Lobos, right? Like,
nice.
It's, you know, 3 years of Spanish later, and the best I got is hablo español un poquito.
That's not bad.
Yeah, anything that relates to food and necessary living, I can say in Spanish.
Do you and your husband have a favorite restaurant here in Santa Ana?
So my husband's a vegetarian. I don't know how.
No, that's not unusual for Indians, as a lot of them are. That's true.
So we're still trying to find a good vegetarian space. Obviously, there's some good ones downtown. For me right now, my favorite is Taqueria El Zamorano, right there on Flower and Warner. I've been several times since quarantine. I always get a burrito de lengua.
Nice.
Yeah, sin frijoles.
That's what, you know, I had a boss that was Persian, and they love tongue in Persia and in Iran. So when you take an Iranian with you to a Mexican restaurant, they're going to try to get the tongue tacos or burritos for sure.
Yes. Oh my gosh. When I found out that they had that, because a lot of places also put it on their menu and that they stopped selling it because it's kind of expensive or difficult to get. Right. But oh man, stuff is so good.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites too. But yeah, that's a challenge for your husband, even though I do cook a lot of squash. So, you know, when my oldest son is vegetarian, when he visits, I'll just accommodate him and make more vegetable dishes, you know. But in your husband's case, he grew up vegetarian, do you think?
He did. His whole family, they're all vegetarians. They're all very strict. They're ovo-lacto, so they do have eggs and dairy. But I don't cook anymore. I'm too busy to cook. And so he's off on his own world eating whatever he's eating. And I either will eat instant noodles still as a 32-year-old woman or I eat whatever my mom cooks because she's retired. She's almost 70. She has nothing to do but to cook. And so she'll periodically cook giant meals that I can eat for like 3 days in a row. And she'll either drop it off or my sister will go pick it up.
That's great. So your mom still lives with you or is she nearby?
She's nearby. She still lives in Santana, right? She lives on the west side and kind of in the home that we stayed in the longest. And she's still a renter. She's been a renter her whole life. And I live 5 minutes away from her. When I graduated from law school, I knew I wanted to be back in Santa Ana. I want to be back in Orange County. And I was very, very lucky to get a great job to help pay off this $250,000 in student loan debt and still be able to live near my mom. And it sucks because I don't know if I was allowed to say that, but
that's okay.
with coronavirus, it's been really difficult because part of the reason why I decided to move back was to be close to her because she's older. She's she wears a prosthesis, so she's not disabled, but she is. And I just try to see her. I used to see her at least once a week, and now I can't see her at all except on video, and it's rough.
Yeah, that is hard. That does bring up a good point that there are a lot of senior citizens in Santa Ana.
Yeah, and for me, I try to, you know, have phone calls with her. If we do go pick up food, I do have to stand far away and stuff, but it's hard because that human contact, the hugging and the kissing, and Asian kisses are totally different. It's kind of like an intense sniff to really get your essence in. And I miss that with my mom, and I miss it a lot. But we're being safe, you know. I'm trying to keep her safe because she is older. She's not in perfect health, and I just want to make sure that she'll be okay once we get out of this.
Yeah, God willing, she will be. Like you said, the zip codes in Ward 1 have really been hit hard. Mm-hmm. And the numbers look like they're starting to get a little better in Orange County, but this is a tricky virus for sure.
Yeah, I mean, when you hear about New Zealand closing again, I think
right.
Australia.
It doesn't take much. And there's new strains developing. There's one that's a super infectious strain that's, I think, in Malaysia. So, it's a small world now because of air travel.
Yeah, and people are still traveling, right? I would hope that you would avoid any non-essential travel, but people are still mobile, and it is scary because you don't know. I've known several people who've gotten tested positive. Some of them have been very sick. Some of them have family members who died, and some were asymptomatic. So it is scary because you never know who has it.
And are you able to work remotely with a law firm currently?
I am. Oh, man. I am so lucky because my husband is a tech geek. And when we bought our home last year, he's a veteran. So we were able to purchase our little townhouse with a VA loan. And frankly, that was the only way we were able to afford a home here. And we had a home office kind of set up about 2 weeks before the shutdown happened. And so when it happened, I was like, this is great. I already have everything I need ready to go. But I know most people, frankly, are just not that lucky. And we're trying to get people caught up. And I know there are families who are struggling to get Wi-Fi or internet or access to a laptop. So I understand that struggle too.
Yeah, I think for a working class community, this is a real challenge. And service workers that can't work, it's really tough. What do you think about what they call the looming pension crisis with our city employees? I keep reading that there's just a huge amount of debt piling up. Any thoughts on how we can work with that as a city and try to stay solvent?
Yeah, so I mean, there are definitely a couple things, this is definitely something that I want to have a deeper dive into. But I think one of the concerns that people have is regarding underfunded pensions and unfunded pensions. And it's something that I'm constantly learning about because it is obviously an area of expertise. And so for me, the best way to address something like that is to have economic development where the city is getting tax dollars, where we are actually growing our coffers and our revenue to pay into this. Because one, I do feel that everybody deserves a respectful and honorable retirement. I believe that, you know, no matter who you are, when you've dedicated your life to work and to service, that we should say, you know, you deserve a rest. And I say that having seen my mom and my stepdad work 7 days a week for decades. I mean, they wouldn't even take Lunar New Year's off. Like, they didn't take that off. Asians don't do that. But they worked through those days. You know, they never took a birthday or a holiday off. And for my mom, she doesn't have a retirement. And I'm her retirement. And she's on Social Security disability now, but I'm getting prepared to take care of her because she doesn't have savings. So what I'm saying is, with the pension crisis, or what some people call the pension crisis, is we really got to look at it as, what are we trying to do? Is this a value that we care about, to take care of our workers who've dedicated their life to our city? And secondly, how do we pay for it? And I think we pay for it by expanding revenue sources. And that's why I'm interested in stuff like expanding cannabis and making it easier to open businesses and supporting businesses, because they pay for themselves, and they pay
I think the term is that is growing the pie, making the pie larger.
Exactly. And, you know, to think, and anyone who tries to tell you that, oh, we can't, or we won't, or, you know, I think that it's really kind of a negative outlook, because I'm not trying to be idealistic, but to think that our economy can't grow is literally counterfactual, right? Because our economy can grow. Our top corporations and businesses and organizations, they're growing. And so I think that we can do that. And you see that with Tesla and Apple just passed $2 trillion in a recession. You have Amazon and all these other businesses that are growing. We can do that too.
Yeah, I think the challenge is that the entire retail sector now is really questionable because of COVID and because of Amazon. So, you know, we're going to have people developing new streams or new products or services that, you know, we didn't really anticipate. I think that'll be the challenge. There's a lot of will, especially in the Vietnamese community, like you mentioned. And Latinos are also very entrepreneurial. But
oh, yeah,
we're going to have to find ways to innovate. And that's going to be a challenge.
Well, you know, one is that we've always met the challenge. The world changes, right? The economy changes. I mean, I remember when the internet started, or maybe not started, but got big, right, in the 90s, and everybody's like, books are totally going to disappear. Books are just completely useless now. And I'm pretty sure we're still buying books. It's just different. It's really being nimble and being creative of how we're doing things. And as certain industries or certain ways of practicing business change, we adapt and grow. So for example, when you can't have, you know, a lot of dine-in, well, we're going to find interesting ways for takeout. We're going to find better ways for food delivery, right? Obviously, food delivery apps and everything have exploded since the shutdown. And that was something before very tiny amount of people were actually using it. And so that's where, okay, maybe you're not working in direct retail, but this is another avenue to replace that, among others. And that's just one example. I guess the way I look at it is, when you go back to the Industrial Revolution and whatnot, or the turn of the century, when you had, well, the UK was the best at, you know, building and selling bicycles, whereas the US was at the forefront of building Model Ts. And when you look at that, that's a huge shift, right? And we're looking to the future, not the past, and looking to what are the new economy, you know, the new economies, the new businesses, the new sectors that'll open that we can really tap into. There's going to be more green jobs. There's going to be more delivery jobs. There's going to be more IT jobs, more tech jobs, more customer service jobs that are remote, that gives you the ability to work from wherever you need to work. And we have to retrain our workers to move that way. But you know, as a council member, I can't do that alone. And no city can do it alone. So I think that's a more general philosophical discussion than, you know, city council specifically.
Right. And we had a bit of history in the last election when our first Asian American in a long time got elected to the council, your friend Phil Becerra.
Yeah.
So that'd be interesting if you could get on there and start to build a little group to build on, because we really haven't had that type of diversity on our council the last few years.
Yeah, you know, I'm always excited to have more representation, more diversity of not just ethnic diversity, but of experience, of life experience, of gender, of all these different things, of occupation, because it really allows us to look at all these different issues in new and interesting ways and really come to consensus. And I think that's what's really exciting about this November election, because we really have the opportunity to help mold the next generation, the next era in the city of Santa Ana. And I'm really excited to hopefully be a part of that.
There's a lot of women running for the council this year. I'm encouraged by that, because really it's been an embarrassment that we've only had one woman on the council now for a while. Do you think this will be the year we finally get a couple women elected?
Well, I hope so, because I mean, I'm running to win, right? I'm running to represent this entire city and our community. And if I do win, then we'll have two women on the dais, Councilmember Nelida Mendoza being the current council member. And yeah, you're right. There might be a woman mayor, and there might be a woman to represent Ward 3. I don't know how it'll all shake out. I'm definitely focused on my race, but it is an exciting prospect that hopefully in November, Nelida won't be the only female on the dais.
Right. We even have a couple women running for mayor, and really that's an amazing situation was going on there, that Miguel Pulido has been in office for over 20 years and he's finally terming out.
So I actually looked this up, but I think he's been mayor for 20 years, but he's been a council member since before I was born.
He was on the council before becoming mayor. That's correct.
Yeah. November 1987.
Right. We just lost one of his peers, Rob Richardson, who passed away. Yes. But yeah, Miguel has been there forever. He actually was in Fullerton when he first ran for office, and his family had a business down here, and he ended up moving back to Santa Ana. But he's going to be leaving, so no matter what, we're going to have a new mayor coming in. And mm-hmm. And that's a crowded field. There's even more candidates for mayor than there are for Ward 1.
Yeah, I mean, I think mayor and Ward 3 are the two crowdest races we have right now. And, you know, I think everybody comes with a bit of different experience. I'm thinking of all the candidates, and it's definitely going to be an interesting race. I'm watching everyone and learning from everyone, and I think that's really important as we move forward.
Well, this being a ward-specific election, I got to believe you have a pretty good shot at Ward 1, given the demographics there, no?
I hope so. I mean, definitely a part of running here as an Asian American person is because that's what the ward was districted for. I feel very strongly about representation because I respect the council members, but as someone who is a refugee, whose family fled, you know, a war-torn country, I was really disappointed. And this is just a minor example, but it's an example that I think reflects the sensitivities we have in the city, which is the meeting before April 30th, not one council member mentioned the fall of Saigon or Black April. And I know we have so much going on, but, you know, we had mentioned Mother's Day and we had mentioned all these other holidays. And Black April is something that is just so core to this Vietnamese American community, but no one acknowledged it. And that was just a little thing that we could have said or acknowledged that would have really, I think, helped continue to bridge that gap in our communities, right? And so that's just one example. And so I'm excited to do that, but I'm definitely not running as, quote, the Vietnamese candidate, because as I've demonstrated before, we're working on a broad coalition of support. I don't believe in relying on only one, whether it's, you know, ethnic group or any organization, it's about, like you said, kind of growing the pie, right? You're growing the base. We want people to believe in this vision too.
Yeah, I think there's only one other candidate this year who is, I think, half Vietnamese.
Janelle Welker.
Yeah, Janelle Welker in Ward 3. But the two of you, that's it. So I do hope that we'll see more involvement from the Vietnamese community in our local elections. School board, I'd love to see someone run for school board. That'd be a really nice move.
So that's really interesting that you brought that up, because in West Santa Ana, the students like myself who grew up there, we went to
Garden Grove Unified.
Exactly. And we have Vietnamese representation on the Garden Grove Unified School District Board. And, you know, SAUSD is the rest of most of the rest of Santa Ana. I think we have a little bit of Tustin and a little bit of Irvine, if I'm not mistaken. So,
you're correct.
Yeah. And so, you know, we have in Garden Grove Unified, we do have a pretty diverse board there, actually. That is more representative of those students. But what I want to see when you're talking about school boards and representation is better allyship, I guess better partnerships with our school districts, including Garden Grove Unified, so that we can really bring those students in. We have, last I checked, about 8,000 students in Garden Grove Unified who are Santa Ana residents. And so when we're not having those partnerships and we're only focusing on one school district, we're also leaving out a large minority of students, and they also all most happen to be Asian American, right? And that's kind of like a double whammy.
I agree. Well, in this move to ward specific elections, I think is a good move for the West Side in particular, because now you'll have your own council member, and hopefully they can work hard to represent that area better than it has been.
Yeah, I mean, aside from, you know, Asian Americans not having representation, just as a West Sider, we have constantly felt like the black sheep of the family. It's almost like folks forget Santa Ana passes the river, goes west of the river. And, you know, when you talk to residents there, it's historically we were divided into three wards. And so no one lived there or had grown up there necessarily. And it's really frustrating because people don't, or the council doesn't necessarily make decisions taking into account the West Side. And so I really do hope that we can advocate for more of the development on the West Side and issues dealing with the West Side. I'm excited for New Hope Library. That's my home library, and that we've definitely invested in that, and that we can grow programs on the West Side.
So in the few minutes we have left here, what do you think about homelessness? What are we going to do about that issue here in Santa Ana?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing is, one, I do have to commend the council for, dealing with an incredibly difficult issue as much as they have, and really standing up for Santa Ana residents, this current council. I know, you know, every council has been a bit different, and I really do appreciate that, because I very much feel for our residents who are homeless, who are houseless, who don't have a place to stay consistently. I know friends and who have been homeless before, but I definitely believe that we are doing what we need to do for our residents, and that other cities need to step up. And I've said this to other elected. I've said it to their faces in both, nonpartisan as well as Democratic forums or whatever forums. I let people know that it's not okay that Santa Ana residents who have the lowest median income in the county are bearing the greatest burden on this regional crisis. And so the first thing I really appreciate is dealing with the shelters that we have now, opening the shelters that we need to open pursuant to the settlement lawsuit. And the third thing is continue to be hard against the county and other cities that are not doing their fair share. And one of the best examples of the county's failure to actually utilize the funds that they have in their coffers to deal with this problem, because, oh, they don't have any space, or, oh, it's too far from services, is when COVID hit, they opened a shelter in Tribuco Canyon. The Janus facility that was previously a juvenile detention facility. That was really quick. I think they did it in like 2 weeks. It wasn't hard.
I think
hard.
You're right.
Yeah.
Well, can you believe we are at the end of our hour? I can't believe it. I thought we were going to use it up. So I want to thank our sponsor again, El Pollo Norteño. If you are hungry and looking for a great meal, they have two locations here in Santa Ana. You can look them up on Facebook, El Pollo Norteño, delicious mesquite grilled chicken. Ty, you've been a great guest. Thank you for being our inaugural guest. And we had a bit of a hiccup at the start, but now I should have an easier time of it the next show. But I want to thank you and wish you the best and good luck. And if you get elected, let's get you back on the show. What do you think?
That sounds fantastic. Thank you so much for having me. I had a lot of fun and the hour did fly by.
It sure did. Well, listen, best of luck on your campaign and look forward to talking to you again.
Okay. Well, everybody vote Ty Viet Phan for Santa Ana City Council Ward 1. Bye.
Bye-bye.